This is the Ingles Information Aisle with Leah McGrath, helping you eat healthy, feel great, and understand your nutrition. Now, here's your host, Ingles dietitian Leah McGrath.
Good Saturday morning. Welcome to the Ingles Information Aisle. This is Leah McGrath, your Ingles dietitian. As many of you who listen to the show regularly know, I do a lot to try and educate people about food and farming and do some myth busting too. At Ingles, we work with farmers of all shapes and sizes from all over the country and, in fact, all over the world. So it's really important to us that our customers understand a little bit more about farming and about where their food is coming from, how it's being grown, so that they don't get kind of wrapped up in fear-mongering things that they hear or see on Twitter or on social media and then become afraid of different foods. And I became aware of a person through social media. Her name is Michelle Payne Knoper. And am I saying that right, Michelle? Knoper.
You are. No, you're fine. No worries.
Okay. And we kind of connected on social media. Michelle, you weren't exactly stalking me, were you? Were you stalking me? You can say.
No, I wasn't stalking you, I promise. Were you stalking me?
I might have been stalking you. Because I liked some of the things that Michelle was saying and her voice to advocate for agriculture is a really important one in the conversation today. We call that being an advocate. And it's AGVOCATE, which is maybe helping spread the word about farming. So, Michelle, thanks for joining us on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. Looking forward to a great conversation, Leah.
So, Michelle, tell us a little bit about your background. Did you grow up on a farm? You know, are you living on a farm now? Set the stage for us a little bit.
Sure. Well, I'm basically a lifetime farm girl. I have a love affair with beautiful black and white cattle that we call Holsteins.
Okay.
And I grew up in southern Michigan on a farm, went to Michigan State University, have a couple of degrees in agriculture, and have spent my entire career working in the farm and food business. And today I do live on a small farm with my daughter in west central Indiana. Still, I'm a Michigan State Spartan down here, but she and I really enjoy working on our cattle together and showing them and so forth. And I've been very fortunate to be able to build my business around connecting farm and food.
And how did you get, because I think you're very involved right now in the conversation about farming and trying to help educate people a little bit more about farming and also to give farmers an opportunity to voice their beliefs and their passion about farming. How did you get involved in that conversation?
Well, when I started my professional speaking business, Cause Matters Corporation, 15 years ago, I saw a real need at that point that farmers needed to learn to talk with people about what they do. I mean, farming population is typically very independent, modest, and a bit stubborn. And frankly, we usually prefer to work with our land and our animals than dealing
sure.
with people. And that's not a slam, right? It's just the reality of the personalities in farming. And so I saw that on one side of the equation, and then on the other side of the equation, I saw 98.5% of the population that's not on a farm or ranch today. We're typically 3 to 4 generations removed. So I saw that there was a huge gap, and one that I really believe that can be solved, perhaps a bit or at least narrowed through conversations around farm and food and trying to remove some of the emotionalism and just getting back to the facts of this is how food is grown and these are your choices when you go to the grocery store and everybody gets to decide what's right for them.
Yeah, I think you brought up a very valid point. I think some of the statistics I've seen are that it's a very small percentage of the population that identifies as being a farmer. I think it's, like you said, around less than probably 2% of the population?
Yes, it's about 1.5%. And it's interesting because over 2/3 of the population in the state actually lives in the city. So, you know, that furthers the problem as well.
Well, and, you know, so many people in this area in western North Carolina, their parents or their grandparents grew up on a farm, but those farms are long gone in many cases. They they were sold when dairy farming is often a very good example. We know it's such hard work. It's 365 days a year. And a lot of those dairy farmers, once they retire or they get old or get sick or they pass away, their children no longer want to operate a farm. And so the farm is sold and becomes housing or a shopping center or, so people aren't living on farms. They're not even living near farms anymore. So how do you talk to those people when they are so far removed from farming?
Well, you know, I think it's very simple, Leah. One of the reasons why you and I connect is because we share so many commonalities and common interests. We both believe in science. We both believe in food. I probably believe in Cheetos and chocolate a little bit more than you do.
Okay, we'll give you that.
All in moderation.
Right, exactly.
But what I always encourage people, whether they're on the farm side or the food side, is to connect on commonalities. So, you know, one of the defining things about me is that I'm a mom, and I make food choices just like other moms. And when I sit down and do some of my research for either one of my books, I talk with other moms about what they're looking for. And whether you're male or female, whether you're a business owner, whether you're a stay-at-home mom, people just want to make the right food choices for their family, and they want to feel good about what they are doing. And so where I always encourage people to connect is to find that common ground and to find some things that you can talk about first. You know, if you delve into a conversation with someone you've never met about GMOs, it's not really likely to go very well because that's such an emotional issue.
Right, exactly.
But instead, if we can bat the ball around about a particular kind of food or a sports team, you know, that's why I talk about Michigan State, is because that's something that people, at least up in the Midwest, can relate to. I'm not sure doubt about it in your country. But.
No. Yeah. It would be probably, it would be probably something with Chapel Hill or NC State or University of Georgia. So it would be one of those big Southern sports teams, probably.
Yeah, so I was trying to avoid all of those mentions, but
okay.
That's a commonality too, even though it's obviously a rivalry.
It's
something that's in common. And I think that's the point about food is, you know, food is meant to be enjoyed. Food is sustenance. Food is essential to our bodies. It's essential to our families. It should not be an emotional, contentious issue.
Right, exactly. Well, we're coming to the end of this first segment, but we want to make sure we mention Michelle's website, which is causematters.com. And you can also find Michelle, I'm looking at the buttons on your website. You're practically on everything else. So make sure you go to her website, causematters.com. You can find her on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and a blog. Stay tuned to the Ingles Information Aisle. Welcome back to the Ingles Information Aisle. This is Leah McGrath, your Ingles dietitian, talking with Michelle Payne-Knopper about whose business is called Cause Matters. It's causematters.com. And she's a speaker. She grew up on a farm. She's a farm girl, she calls herself. She identifies as a farm girl. And she's really trying to engage in conversations, find common ground with people around the issue of farming and agriculture. You know, Michelle, you and I both are in this conversation almost on a daily basis. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people out there who spend a lot of time and spend a lot of money scaring consumers, my customers, about food and farming. And it is, some days it's so frustrating to me. So do you feel the same way? I mean, do you sit back some days and see a post or an article and just feel like walking away from it?
Well, I don't ever feel like walking away from it because, this whole farming thing is ingrained in who I am. And I think a lot of people from the farm side say that. But do I feel extraordinarily frustrated with the misinformation and the drama around the food plate? Yes, absolutely. And it amazes me how something that should be treated as a need for us has become this crazy emotional discussion. It's a very privileged discussion that we have in the States, frankly.
Yes. Yeah, we are in a very special time right now where we have such, for most of us, there's such an abundance of food and such a variety of choices when we walk into a typical supermarket like an Ingles Market where I work, that we can make all kinds of decisions on a daily basis. Do we want fresh, frozen, canned? Do we want food, local food? Do we want something that's an exotic imported fruit or vegetable? Do we want grass-fed? Do we want certified organic? Do we want, hormone? Do we want something that's labeled hormone-free? I mean, we have so much choice that we waste a lot of our own food. And then the irony of the situation, and I think I just tweeted this morning, is not only do we waste so much food, we're so afraid of our food now. This is a time in history that I don't remember it being like this 10 or 15 years ago or when I was growing up. We were thankful. We weren't afraid of food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very sad because I do see a great deal of fear mongering. And I think when people go to the grocery store, they feel guilty. I know that when I go grocery shopping, I try to get through the store as fast as I possibly can. One, because I start getting mad about all the issues. You know, when I look at the food product, to me, it's not just a strawberry. I think about all the discussions that are being had around genetics and strawberries and how ridiculous it is. And then I look at, consider chemicals that are in the different fruits, which, by the way, are in all fruits because they naturally produce them. And it's really saddening to me that people seem to lack the basic senses, if you will, in being able to identify misinformation and what I call drama around the food plate.
Well, and you've written a book that I got, which was great. I think it really highlights some of the things that you've been saying. It's called No More Food Fights. What I like about it, too, is there's two sides. Can you describe the book a little bit to everybody?
Sure, I can. No More Food Fights, actually released back in 2013, and it is a book that flips. So one side, as Leah had alluded to, is for the food side, and it focuses on the six senses, which are the five senses plus common sense, on being able to make your food decisions and have a good conversation about food. And then when you flip it over, I actually have 6.5 steps for the farm side to be able to connect through a meaningful conversation. So it's designed to be a book that brings people together to connect in the middle of the plate, and there's actually a shared chapter between the two sides about being able to do exactly that, connect at the middle of the plate. And really for anybody who's listening with an interest in food, No More Food Fights is designed to help you understand a little bit about more where your food comes from and just get back to some of the basics, because food does not have to be complicated. It's just a matter of trying to understand what the issues are surrounding our plate and our grocery cart.
Yeah, I think it's a great book, Michelle, and I really enjoyed reading it. I took it, I think I was reading on a plane on a recent business trip, and I thought, she really has touched on some of the big issues. And what you just said about people being in the store, sometimes in the grocery aisle, and just being so overwhelmed with the amount of imagery that's on the front of the package, the amount of symbols, the amount of claims, the amount of, labels that are on the front of the package, that if I wasn't a dietitian, I think I would almost be driven to distraction. I'd want to cry because I wouldn't know what all these things meant. So we have about 2 minutes in this segment. What are some that really drive you crazy? What are some of the labels on food that really drive you crazy, Michelle?
Any label that infers guilt or superiority. Food should never make you feel guilty unless, of course, you're consuming too many calories, and that's
right.
On you, not on the label.
Okay.
But to infer superiority, so for example, hormone-free. There's no hormone-free with the exception of salt food in your grocery store. And so that one really gets me going. Antibiotic-free claims also are really bothersome because, frankly, it's against FDA regulations and the law to use antibiotics in the way that some labels claim. And then the chemical and production style. So, for example, claiming that something is chemical-free is actually factually incorrect when you look at the science, because
sure,
your body is filled with chemicals, you're comprised of chemicals. And then the same is true about production styles, conventional versus organic. You certainly have a right to make that choice for your family, but just know that there is not scientific information that conclusively proves that organic is more nutritional or better for your family. So don't feel guilty if you can't afford it. Just know that it's a choice. It's a production choice, and it's a food purchasing choice.
I agree. Hear, hear. And I just recorded another in-store radio segment that basically says to remind people that the USDA organic symbol on products is meant as a certification for agricultural practices, not an endorsement of nutritional superiority or food safety. Stay tuned to the Ingles Information Aisle. We're talking about what's going on in the food world today and why is it so confusing and why are these voices fighting about food? Welcome back to the Ingles Information Aisle. This is Leah, your Ingles dietitian, talking with Michelle Payne Knopper. She is a speaker who's really trying to bridge the gap for folks between the average consumer, the typical consumer, and the farmer. And she's out there trying to bring rational thought and science into the conversation by developing a common ground with people between, so the farmers know how to talk to consumers more and so that the consumers can understand a bit more about farming. Folks, we only have about 1.5% of the population as a farmer. They're not physically going to be able to go to the grocery store with you. They're not going to be able to meet you in your home. So we really need more people to understand more about farming and to be advocates for farming and telling the stories of farmers. You can find Michelle's website as causematters.com. And Michelle, when we were offline just for a few minutes there, we were talking about some of the label claims and maybe even in restaurants that drive us crazy. And I was telling you one that came up today was restaurants and brands describing their products as clean ingredient products. And what's your reaction when you hear that?
Well, I find, quite frankly, a lot of the label claims to be a little bit of overkill. Should we be striving to have the healthiest ingredients possible? Yes. But just because you cannot pronounce an ingredient on a product does not mean that it's bad for you. You know, for example, one of the things that I wrote about in my upcoming book, Food Truths, is about dihydrogen monoxide.
Oh, right.
And how awful it is. And it was actually a featured scam on Snopes because it's water.
Right.
And when people see scientific names, they have a tendency a little bit. So rather than having clean labels, I would rather have a clean conscience about having the understanding about what's in my food and truly what's important. And I don't think that misinformation from celebrities helps that. I would prefer to get science-based information from dietitians such as yourself.
Oh, thanks, Michelle. I appreciate that. And I agree with you, too. I think that a lot of times, you know, I love watching movies as much as the next person, but I am not going to get advice about my medical care, the need for vaccinations, nutrition, or anything else from a celebrity that, you know, is in a movie that I like. That's just not going to happen, folks. And please, if you want science-based information, you need to go to people who are trained and educated in that field, not someone who has celebrity status. The whole issue for me, Michelle, with the clean labeling is what is the opposite of a clean label or a clean list of ingredients? Is it dirty products? And that just really hits me the wrong way. So as we were talking off when we were on break, one of my friends who is a consumer affairs for a supermarket chain was saying that she loves to promote clear. So, like as you were saying, let's promote a better understanding of what's in our food for manufacturers and brands and marketers to be more transparent about their food and ingredients, but not this clean versus not unclean dichotomy. I don't think that's helpful. So we have a few minutes left in the segment. Tell us a little bit about your upcoming book.
Well, I wrote a book that's hopefully going to be released by Thanksgiving of this year in 2016. It's a very lengthy title, but the main title is Food Truths from Farm to Table, and then the subtitle is 25 Surprising Ways to Shop and Eat Without Guilt. And it is strictly a book that is for people who are foodies, chefs, moms, dads, grocery store buyers, people who eat. So essentially anyone with an interest in food. And what I did was focused on 9 sections of the grocery store. So we go from the dairy and egg through to the bread and baking aisle and then end with deli and food service. And I actually interviewed over 50 people for the book to try to get a lot of personal stories about exactly how food is grown today, to lift that veil, if you will, about modern day agriculture and to get firsthand perspective. I also interviewed people like you from a dietetic
perspective.
Yeah. And really, the book focuses on 25 food truths that are designed to help you feel good about the food that you buy, and they are embedded throughout the book. It includes a food truth like hormones are in everything, just as we've already discussed. Soil is a farm's greatest asset, and the grand finale of the 25 food truths are buying and eating the right food doesn't have to be time-consuming. And so really what the purpose is to be able to address the myths that are out there about food with personal stories from people who are producing that food grounded in scientific fact. So
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. So that you said that'll be out hopefully around Thanksgiving.
Yes.
So we'll have to have you on again around then and really talk the book up around Thanksgiving. How about that?
I'd appreciate that. It's been a lot of fun to write it, and I think probably in 15 years that I've been writing and speaking, it has really been probably one of the most challenging things that I've done.
So, yeah, I think a lot of people don't understand, because as we talked earlier, they're so far removed from farming that they may have a sort of an idealized our romantic view of what farming life is like, but farmers nowadays have really embraced technology, and that's a good thing. It helps them to produce things more efficiently and safely, and there's a lot of regulations they have to follow for not only consumer safety but the safety of the environment and their own workers. So I don't know necessarily that people are always aware that these farmers these days are very, very smart business people. And they're not your country bumpkin with wearing a pair of overalls. They're very astute business people. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the final chapters that I wrote about was in Everything is in Moderation. And I actually chose that to write about the economics of farms so that people understood. And I got examples from specific farmers about their cost of what it took to grow, I think it was 2,000 acres of corn and beans, you know, traditional commodity crop. But it's the same applies whether you're in North Carolina or whether you're in California. Farmers are risking millions of dollars. And no, they are not getting millions back from the government. Your tax dollars are not going to fund them. But the technology that is involved is fascinating. And when I interviewed all of the farmers, I asked them to be very specific about the products they use, the practices that they use, and why they use those. And one of the interesting ones is I actually had Matt Boucher out of Illinois talk about how he uses drones, and he does so for a couple of different reasons.
Well, one is Michelle, we're going to have to make sure people read that section of your book because we're run out of time, unfortunately. So make sure we go to Michelle's website, causematters.com. Thank you so much for joining us on the Ingles Information Aisle.
Thank you.